Professor John Lott is the author of a series of books, one of which, probably his most famous, is More Guns, Less Crime. He's also head of the Crime Research Prevention Center. And ironically, John and I were having dinner just two nights ago talking about mass shootings. John, how you doing?
Doing great. It's the Crime Prevention Research Center rather than Preventing Research.
Crime Prevention Research Center. And we were talking about mass shootings literally over dinner, and one of the things you mentioned was that people don't realize that these things happen about 18 or so times per year. So when Obama comes out as he did last night and talks about how often these things happen, the number has been fairly consistent over the last several decades, has it not?
Yeah, that's right. I suppose the most irritating thing about Obama's presentation last night, or one of them, was he keeps on calling for the same gun control laws, these expanded background checks, but we still don't know whether it would have made any difference in this Oregon case. I would point out that Oregon already has the law, though, that he's saying that he wants to have federally. But more important, it wouldn't have stopped any of the ones he's spoken out on. And so it just is this strange disconnect where he keeps on saying, we've got to do something, we've got to do something, and yet the law that he's pushing wouldn't have stopped a single one of the ones that he's given talks on.
John, gun rights advocates like yourself often say that in order to minimize the carnage, a good guy with the gun needs to be nearby. The soonest a good guy with a gun can get there, the sooner the carnage will be stopped or minimized. Have there been any good guys with guns that have stopped or minimized mass shootings, or what would have been greater mass shootings in recent times?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just in the last 5 years or so, you can find a few dozen. I have them on
a few dozen?
Yeah. I mean, the amazing thing is, some of these get like one news story, but they don't get anything more than local news coverage. I've tried Fox and others, even when you've had video of some of these. There's one case from recently where just a few months ago in Georgia, there was a liquor store. Somebody had gone in there, started shooting up the place, killed two of the people. Fortunately, there was a concealed carry permit holder that was walking by, came into the store, exchanged gunfire with the killer there, and the killer ran off. And the sheriff in the area said that there was absolutely no doubt in his mind that other people would have been killed if the permit holder hadn't been by there. And it was on tape. And so you would think, here's a perfect story. I mean, it's one thing to say nobody gets killed, and that may reduce the newsworthiness. But here you had two people killed, and it was on videotape. You think kind of the perfect thing for national news to pick up, but they didn't pick up. But there's other big cases. I mean, just this year, you had on a downtown street in Chicago, somebody started firing their gun at people. An Uber driver who had a permanent concealed handgun in Chicago had just stopped and dropped off a fare, was not very far away, could see this guy pretty close to him, starting to fire his gun, got out of his car and fired and hit the guy who was doing the shooting. The state's attorney there in that case said that there was absolutely no doubt in his mind that the permit holder had saved multiple lives in that case. And, it's something that just goes on from time to time, and it just doesn't get news coverage.
John, you were telling me about a case, I forget where it took place, where it was a home invasion, and someone's grandmother had a knife to her throat. Her grandson went up, got a firearm that his dad had taught him to use, and he shot and killed this intruder. There was very little coverage, and you actually called the reporter and asked her why the story was no more than a couple hundred words. Tell us about that story, and tell us about the shooting incident.
Yeah, I mean, this occurred in South Bend, Indiana. It was a pretty remarkable case. You had this 11-year-old boy whose father had died earlier from cancer. His mother had left the picture. She was a drug addict, and she had left the boy with the mother of the father. And but she had told a gang leader that she was going out with that the grandmother there had money and jewelry at the house. And the gang leader had gone over there, stabbed the grandmother.
John, my fault for getting you to start this story with so little time. We're going to take a quick break, and then you can pick up the story on the other end. I'm talking to John Lott, who is head of the Crime Prevention Research Center, author of the book More Guns, Less Crime. Don't leave town. Professor John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime, head of the Crime Prevention Research Center, is my guest. John, before the break, you were telling us a story of a home invasion in Indiana, and I should not have gotten you started with so little time in the segment. So pick it up from the beginning in case people are just now joining us.
Sure, I'm sure there are better people that can tell a story faster than I can. But anyway, this boy's grandmother had money and jewelry there. The mom had left the scene, was a drug addict, had told her boyfriend that the money and jewelry was there. The drug gang leader had gone over, stabbed the grandmother, had a box cutter to her throat, and was threatened to kill her. She tried to delay as long as possible, telling this gang leader where the money and jewelry was, because she was convinced that as soon as she was going to tell him, he was going to kill her and then kill the grandson. Fortunately, what had happened was that before the boy's father had died from cancer, he had taught the boy how to shoot. And so this 11-year-old went up, got the grandmother's rifle, came down, and fatally shot this gang leader in the chest. The local newspaper in the South Bend, Indiana, ran a story about 250 words in the back of the newspaper. And I had noticed I'd had about 10 of these studies, or 10 of these types of cases where young children had used guns to save lives in my book, The Bias Against Guns. And I just decided, and I noticed that these were crime reporters. When they had written on other topics, it would get picked up and played around in newspapers all over the country. But these particular stories were usually much shorter, didn't get a lot of press even in the place where it occurred, and didn't get the picked up in other newspapers. So I called up the reporters just to find out why that was the case. And the response I got was, well, they were worried that if they put children and guns in a positive light, then that might encourage other parents to let children have access to guns. And then that those reporters would somehow be guilty then or responsible for accidental gun deaths involving kids.
John, when you told me that story, it is mind-boggling on so many different levels, one of which is I thought a reporter's job was to report, not to shape or fashion a story consistent with a public policy that he or she wants. My goodness, if I report the story accurately, it might encourage more parents to teach their kids how to use firearms, in which case I'll be morally culpable in the event that people die. Unbelievable.
Right. I mean, it surely doesn't fit some of the stuff we were just talking about with mass shootings and what have you.
Which is what you talked about in your book, Bias Against Guns. John, also talk to us about the shooting that took place at I think it was called Appalachia Law School, where a gunman came in and killed a law school dean, a teacher, and a student. There were a couple of students there who were off-duty officers.
I only have a minute.
Okay.
I only have a couple minutes on this. But I had found out that these students had used their guns to stop the attack and written a piece in the New York Post. I'd sent it to you. You'd seen it. And you got one of the students there, along with myself, to be on your radio show at the time. And one of the things that happened when we were on the show was the student, Tracy Bridges, mentioned that he'd talked to like 50 reporters the day that the incident happened, but... And being a law school student, he had tried to look up you know, in these computerized news searches that lawyers have access to, because you just want to see what they said about him. And he was shocked. He told you on your show that he was shocked that he just, even though he spent all this time, and the other student who had stopped had spent all this time talking to the newspaper people, they just ignored him. And I found it interesting, and so I decided to go and call up the reporters and find out if what he was saying was true. And it was. They talked to the either one or both of the students there, but rather than reporting the students had used their guns to stop the attack, they'd used terms like the students had tackled or subdued the attack, which was true, but they only did that after they used the gun to stop him. And I mentioned to you that I thought it would be a lot more newsworthy, a lot more people talking about the story if they read about it, and the newspaper said the students used their guns to stop the attack. Other people would tell people about the article that they read more likely in that case than just saying that the students had subdued them. And when I called up the reporters, like Maria Glad at the Washington Post, her response was, well, she only had 930 words to do this on the story and just didn't have enough space to get into that aspect of it. But she'd have a few paragraphs to go and talk about the type of gun that was used, or she could go and talk about the students subduing or tackling the attacker. I think she used the word tackle. You know, but it seems like rather than saying tackle, they could have said use their guns to stop them. And it just seems contrary to what would have been considered newsworthy, what would have gotten and grabbed people's attention. And it's unfortunate because, you know, if anything, I think it probably implied bad advice that somehow people could openly run across an open area against an armed person and try to stop them. Whereas I'm not sure I would recommend that somebody do that.
My guest is John Lott, head of the Crime Prevention Research Center, author of More Guns, Less Crime, also author of Bias Against Guns. John, before you go, was this campus, this community college in Oregon, a so-called gun-free zone?
Yeah. I mean, you can go and look. It's on our website at crimeresearch.org. I have the link to it there, but you can see if you bring a water pistol on campus, if you bring a BB gun, if you bring a firearm, you're in violation of the rules, and they will expel you if you're a student or fire you if you're a faculty member. I'm sorry, I got to go now, but it's great talking to you.
Okay, John, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. John is in high demand today, as he always is whenever there's a mass shooting, because he's the only law professor, only research professor, who has done a countywide study looking at every gun law in every county, and it drove him to his conclusion, more guns, less crime. Before he began his research, John said he had no idea one way or the other where his research would go, which is one of the reasons why I value his research. He was not pushing for any kind of preconceived notion. In fact, he thought the opposite would be the case, that the more gun laws there were, the less violence that there would be. And it turned out the opposite was true, because good guys abide by gun laws, bad guys don't, which is why we call them bad guys. I am Larry Elder. 818-353-1276. 818-353-1276. More on the Oregon shooting when we come back.